The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners. Michael Steele here from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
How do you see 2023 coming together? I love my conversations with you. Believe it or not, folks, my conversations with Steve oftentimes are not that much about politics. It's actually more about philosophy and, you know, history, as you heard Steve reference throughout the conversation. So in light of how you've sort of really kind of laid bare where we are at this moment, where there's still a great deal of angst with working class Americans, who aren't necessarily looking at their problems through a political lens. Yeah, there's some tribalism at the edges. We know that. But in the main, they're not looking at it through that political lens. They could give a rat shit about a Republican or Democrat as long as, you know, a gallon of milk is not $6 a gallon and a loaf of bread is not $5 a loaf, right? So they're concerned about bread and butter, basic daily necessities being met, job opportunities, and securing the future for their kids. You talked about that. You talked about Adams' son is the next generation stepping up and so forth. They still have that aspiration. What do you think the aspiration is or should be for the American people when they look at the kind of men and women who are putting themselves out as leaders, wannabe leaders, going into this next cycle, which I think could be very, very important in determining the new baby steps, you know, that the country's got to take?
So I think 23 is going to be a very chaotic year. I think it will be defined internationally by what happens in Ukraine and Russia. I'm not sure that I think that looking at the situation geopolitically that Vladimir Putin necessarily survives the year. Mm-hmm. Right? It's the American viewpoint on that is, well, Vladimir Putin being deposed from power in Russia would be a good thing. Well, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe. Humility, right, around wishing for, right, the outcomes that we think are good, because they typically don't turn out like they do. I think there is a profound disconnect, a great disorientation around what is real. Right. There's a viewpoint that you see most pointedly espoused on cable news. Right. Mm-hmm. I think those are the house organs almost of a society apart. Right. That covers a narrow geography. Elon Musk, Sam Bankman-Fried,
right?
This world, and I think that world is vulnerable to being taken over by an outside reform and renewal movement, and they have always existed in this country. I think that there is an absence of leadership, that we are at a hinge of history, at a moment of generational change, and the status quo should be contested directly, ferociously, in the name of better. And I think that, like, ahead on the horizon, again, is the 250th anniversary of the country. It's an enormous event.
Right.
And so it gives an opportunity for there to be a renewal, a commitment to American citizenship, to the concept of duty and obligation, that life is not about conflict. It is about joy, the pursuit of happiness. And at the end of the day, the American people love America. And so we should have a conversation about what America means, right, as we move yes. into the middle point of the 20th century.
I agree with that.
You know, and so there's a small number of people that I look around, you know, in the country who have character and conviction and integrity and are ready for the mission. But I reject the idea that everything in America is decided in Washington, right? Oh, and I yeah. like the hubris, right? So far as it pertains to the state of New Hampshire, right? And what's amazing when you watch the coverage, right? Because it really demonstrates the bias, right? And I can't tell you, I've talked to 100 political reporters that I know, and they seem mystified when I say this to them. The date of the New Hampshire primary is not set by the president, the chairman of the DNC, or by anyone in Washington, D.C. And they can't comprehend that statement.
Right, right.
That statement is as true a statement as saying the sun is going to rise in the east tomorrow. That's how great the disconnect of this moment is.
Right.
And I think everything that everyone is being told is going to happen is not, in fact, going to happen. And I think the people that are running these media companies are completely lost, right? They're completely disconnected. How could you possibly be connected, right, to the life of any person in this country if you make hundreds of millions of dollars a year, right? And you live a life on private jet aircraft behind walled compounds and yachts, right? How many people, right, are gonna be on television today talking to shows who make less than $5 million a year?
Yeah.
Right? These are the people that are in touch, right? This is the sensibility, right? Like, what's going on in people's lives is kind of in the scene, Red Herd and Playbook and Politico. Right. So, like, there's a political culture in DC and, like, wherever you live, right? People are into their community. Right. There's a vast political community. Some of it's digital, right? Some geographic, like in Washington, D.C. But that sensibility is, I think, really detached from the country. Right. And I just want to tell a story about this experience I had. I wrote about it on my Substack, The Warning.
The Warning, yes. It's a great, by the way, folks, check it out. It's a great Substack.
It's like I have this moment. I wrote about it like earlier this year. So I was at a drag show in P-Town earlier this summer. And we got there late. And there were two seats, like row four. Mm-hmm. And just because I've been on a stage a lot and I know how lighting works, I knew exactly how far the person on the stage could see into that audience.
Right.
When I sat down, I had an orange linen shirt on.
Oh Lord.
I just like I'm in the I'm fucked.
You might as well have said right here.
Right. So as this unfolds, right? Just all on video. I get called up in front of the crowd and, I'm identified and they go, and I'm just a total loss for words. It's all on video, right? You're like, you can do it. So I go, So I'm at the University of Iowa game, right? Similar thing. And I'm there and there with my wife, and she's never been to a Big Ten football game. She's never she's Canadian. She's never, been to Iowa, University of Iowa. My daughter goes there, and we're at the football game and talking to the people next to us. And the guy next to us goes, he goes, I haven't missed a game in 34 years. And the guy behind us, he goes 38 years. And we're talking, we're chatting, and they go, have you been to Iowa before? And because it was our first game, she goes, no. I go, I've been here a lot. In fact, I've been to all of your 99 of your counties, right? And the guy, and I don't know why I said it, right? And right. He goes, well, what do you do, right? It opened up the thing, and I said, I work in politics. And he goes, well, he goes, are you a Republican or Democrat? Right. And I go, I've been both. Right. And he goes, well, you know, who are you with? And I go, well, I was a Republican. And I go, but I'm not a Trump guy. And he goes, hey, because I voted for him twice. He goes, but fuck Trump, he's crazy. Right. The guy behind me goes, yeah, I agree. Right. So we talk about this for a couple minutes. Right. We make fun of Grassley. Right. You know, guys, they all voted for Grassley too. I go, he's a voting. I go, he's a fact. He's elected in 1958 in Eisenhower. Right. Talked about how crazy that was. Right. But no one wanted to kill anyone.
Right.
Right. Joking around. Right. Everyone had a beer in their hand. And then the guy next to me he changed subject. He goes, what do I want to tell you about? He goes, do you know about the wave? And he goes, well, at the end of the first quarter at University of Iowa game, he goes, Children's Hospital above there, the children will be waving. There's a kid captain. It's an incredible tradition. The kid captain picks out a song, right? The song will be played. Everyone will wave, right? You know, 70,000 plus people waving at the sick kids. Sick kids will wave back. And he goes to me, he goes, I've never missed a game. I've either watched it from this seat or I've watched it from that window with my daughter. He goes, she died in that hospital. Wow. He goes, that's a hospital right in America. Right, Children's Hospital, Iowa City, University of Iowa. Right, he was talking about his gratitude. Right, watching this football game. Right, you know, he had people right that were guests in Iowa, first time there. What did they want to talk about? Right, did they want to give a lecture? Right, to a Canadian about how much better America is.
Right.
Did they want to humiliate someone that they thought like had betrayed Trump? No. What they wanted to talk about? They wanted to talk about 70,000 people, Americans mostly, waving to sick kids, singing the Star Spangled Banner together. We have been led to the edge of the abyss by a generation of well-meaning, well-intentioned in some cases, but failed political leadership. I remember when I was 22 years old, I remember the man from Hope. I remember generational change, excitement from it. And now I'm a middle-aged man, 52. I'm 6 years older than Bill Clinton was.
Mm-hmm.
He ran for president. And now I see him as an old man sitting on a stage with a filthy, dirty dressed hustler and criminal, a con. The man was the president of the United States. The man he's sitting next to was the prime minister of Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fucking disgrace. Right? I want change. And I don't think I'm alone.
No.
What I want to see is the exhausted majority of Republicans, Democrats, and independents rise up. I want to see a political leader with the guts to talk about the obligation and duties of citizenship. I want a political leader to go say that I could think of 1,000 things we could have spent $350 billion of the public treasury on, more than a bailout to the 38% of the country that has a college degree and that are the most privileged people in the country. I want someone who can explain the American story. You know, there was this moment, right, that I think we're coming to, that 100 years before 1923, 1924, of course, was 1823 and 1820. Mm-hmm. And an old man came back to America, right, for his last visit. He was the last major general of the American Revolution, the Marquis de Lafayette, mm-hmm. right? Because he was a one-name superstar, right? Lafayette. He had 26 states, and the Marquis came to all of them, traveled around the country, and the crowd swelled. You had an unbelievably vicious presidential campaign in 1824.
Yes, we did.
Right? And the Marquis was on the stage, right, when Andrew Jackson shakes hands with John Quincy Adams and congratulates him, because there was rumor of revolution in the air. But 50 years on, right, of the American Revolution, right, there's this great kind of resurgence of gratitude and unity. Right, as Lafayette travels the country. And what Lafayette said, right, at the moment of victory at Yorktown, right, his take on it is interesting. He says humanity has its victory. Not America. Mm-hmm. Liberty has its country. Now, Lafayette was a strong abolitionist. Lafayette implored that there be abolition of slavery. And he believed the American Revolution was a work unfinished, work undone. But that, and he talked about this when he came back. He said all of the events that have happened, the loss of colonial possessions, the subjugation of colonial territories, the abolition of slavery, the whole concept, right, that one grace is on top of another, will all ultimately be swept away by what was set in motion by what happened at Yorktown. Humanity has its victory because liberty has its country. Right. And so Lafayette, right, in 1824 travels the country and he is sent back across the Atlantic on the United States ship Brandywine, named for the battle where he sheds blood for American liberty.
Mm-hmm.
When on July 4th, 1917, the American Expeditionary Forces arrive. They march straight to Lafayette's tomb. One of the great quotes by Colonel Stanton. He says, Lafayette, we are here.
We're here, yeah.
Lafayette believed that America would save the world. That liberty would save the world. That its expansion would save the world. And so 200 years later, 200 years later, imagine if you could have a conversation with John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, two men who loved each other like brothers, who became estranged and alienated, yep, and made enemies by politics, who reconciled with each other, and both die
on the same day.
On July 4th,
yep,
1826, on the 50th anniversary of the birth of the United States, the two poles, North and South. Imagine if you could talk to them 50 years from the birth of the United States to say 250 years. At the 250-year mark, there will be an American flag on the moon, and there will be one headed to Mars. This is the greatest achievement in human civilization.
Yeah.
It's the great privilege that any of us will ever have, citizenship in a republic that can be made more perfect. The lack of perfection is not an entitlement or a reason for us to be angry about the failures of our ancestors. We have to change our mindset on that. We have to have gratitude for their achievements as the beacon to what we do next. What roads will we build? Right? What peace and prosperity will we make? And that is the job of politics. It's to dream, right? It's to imagine. It's not a data exercise.
Yeah, but that's what it's become.
Right. And so at the end of the day, right, the thing, and I say this, you know, I love you like my brother from another mother, right? Like, I'm going to say this, right? Like, so the answer to this, right, and this is what I meant when I said you were full of shit with love earlier before on this, right, is we need guys like you in the game.
Yeah.
Right? Need people who can talk, communicate, who have a vision, right? Here's the deal, and I'm gonna share this story, because I'm gonna tell you should play Tim Ryan's concession speech or parts of it on this effort. And I'll tell you the story about it. We went for a walk back out behind the building, knew the race was down, and you had a speech. You know, his staff handed him a speech, right? And I took the speech from him, and I said, fuck this speech. I said, Congressman, do your duty. Do your duty.
Yeah.
My gratitude tonight. What a privilege. You're the nominee of the Democratic Party. Yeah. 20 years in Congress, you stood up, you gave it your all. So I couldn't tell you how, no words for how fucking proud I am of you.
Yeah.
How much I love you, man. And he got up and gave that speech. That's what I want, right? Like in the country, I want people of conviction and character and grit and perseverance and toughness. Because I want to say, it's just last thing about Kevin McCarthy. And this is the thing. This has never happened before. I mean, there have been some loathsome people that have served in American politics, mm-hmm, all through American history. Right? There was like the founding fathers, that these guys hated each other.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. No, they did. We romanticize their relationships today, but no, they didn't get along too well.
Hated each other, right? Hated each other. But there has never been. There is no person you can name. I challenge anyone to try with such obvious character deficiencies as Kevin McCarthy, such weakness, such dishonesty,
mm-hmm,
who's ever been elevated. I mean, if I was a Republican member of Congress, and I'm just going to stipulate that I'm a conservative, right? I'm a moderate, but like if I was sitting there, I was a conservative member of Congress, right? Backbencher, sitting watching all this play out.
Right.
This guy's going to be the speaker. At some point, isn't there one person in that group who's going to stand up and say, get the fuck out of here?
Right.
Let me tell you something. I'll vote for AOC before I vote for you.
Yeah.
I'll vote for Hakeem Jeffries before I vote for you. I will vote for every name alphabetically according to the Social Security office before I vote for you. I'd rather be fucking dead than vote for you to be my leader and the Speaker of the House. How could any group of people, collectively or individually, how could you debase yourself? I mean, knows a powerful world. If we were sitting back there, there are not two. If you and I were in Congress, if you and I were in Republican Congress, sitting there, I know 100% we would not vote for the guy.
No fucking way on this planet.
You know, I would. You couldn't get me to do it.
I'd be negotiating with Democrats all damn day if I couldn't pull. If I couldn't pull Republicans, say, look, you got at least two votes for whoever you guys want over this.
And on the one hand, in this era, we live in an era where two people seems like a million.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, right, it's still just two people. That's how fragile all this is.
Yeah.
Right. That's how fragile all this is. And so, like, I think, like, this idea that none of this can ever be disrupted, right? Change isn't going to come. The question is, right, it's like, there's a question that gets asked in D.C., which is basically where we started this conversation out, which I think is the wrong question. Right. And the question is, like, what is the politician question, right, which is how much bullshit, right, will the people put up with?
Well, that's it. That's the core right? of it right there.
But the real question you want to ask the American people, right, is how much bullshit are you going to put up with? Right. Because that's a listening question. Right. So when the politicians in Washington are asking that question, right, that's a self-preservation question.
Right.
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 You listen to the American people, they're trying to tell us something. Right. Taylor Sheridan, like I said again, who I think is deeply connected to this moment, right? But you think people would like Governor Dutton, right? When the scenes when Governor Dutton fires his policy staff.
Right.
Right. What does that mean? From I was talking to somebody in Washington, they were explaining to me, Taylor Sheridan's a political extremist. Only the rubes watch that show, right? You know, this, that, and the other. And I said,
yes.
I said, that's your takeaway from that show? And I said, it confirms my view that you're out of touch.
That's exactly right.
But I think, wow. Right. Like in the same way, right, anyone who has teenagers, right, you have this point of view as you're talking teenagers, like they're not kids anymore. They're not adults, right? You listen to them and you start to hear their worldview develop, right? And they say right. some stuff, right? You're like, wow.
I have that conversation with my two boys all the time. I'm sitting there going, oh shit. Okay.
I'm like, okay, like you're not in touch, like with reality. It's okay. It's gonna get you. And that's what I think about
right.
when I see stuff in Washington. It's all the conversation has never been more insular. It's never been smaller, right? And what I've come to understand, right, is that like for all this Elon Musk Twitter stuff, like it truly is. Right. For people of a certain worldview, it is a national crisis.
Yeah.
This is an important thing.
But it's how one billionaire wants to run his platform.
We got 330 million people.
You ain't got to play on it.
Right? And when I look at this, right, like I, you know, for me, Katie Hobbs and Carrie Lake is not a hard choice.
Right.
Okay. That being said, right.
It was a hard choice.
It was a hard choice
for a lot of people.
Right. There was no state, by the way, that we ever debated longer about whether to let into the union. Right. They were the last of the lower 48 in 1912. Right. But 20 years. Right. And this is probably the reason. Right. But so they're there. Yeah, I guess you're not gonna go for her, right? Like, and okay, I mean, right outcome, But I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. Right? You got Blake Masters, right? If there is an iconic guy, right?
All right.
An archetypal American male.
Mm-hmm.
Highest kind of the man. We're about this movie, right? Is going to be one of the great, great stories of friendship, military valor, that's coming out, black and white.
Right.
Navigators in the Korean War. But the NASA, the Artemis program, I mean, they're going to land a black astronaut, women on the moon.
Yeah.
Sure. These are the people with the right stuff.
Right. Exactly.
Right. You want to see some winners? Like, go read the resumes, right, of the people, that are like the Artemis astronauts.
Right.
Right. Like, best of America. Right. Like, you talk like each of these people. Right. It's like their resume is more ludicrous than the next. Right. There's genius people, like accomplishments. Right.
Right.
You got a guy. He's a Navy combat pilot. He's a naval aviator. Mark Kelly, test pilot. The right stuff.
The right stuff. Yeah.
Is a astronaut. He is, as Tim Ryan pointed out, I think I'm a good husband. Like, think you're a good husband. By all counts, Mark Kelly is America's best husband.
Yeah.
Ryan says, like a beautiful human being.
Yeah.
He barely beat a fascist. Okay. He's the best we got. Okay. When our best are barely beating some of our worst, what does that say?
Well, that goes to the heart of I think the moment we're in is that introspective, as you talked about, approaching our 250th anniversary as a fledgling nation, a grand experiment. Who are we? How do we see the country? You know, I pose the question this way to people when I'm out and about. Are you still in love with America? Do you see her as someone that's worth fighting for, preserving, protecting, defending? What values do you see? Do you see yourselves reflected in her? We talk about amber waves of grain and from sea to shining sea, but that American dream is lost on a lot of people, lost for a lot of people. And how do we as a country now recapture that moment that those men in Annapolis and Philadelphia, Virginia, captured when they said, hey, we want to do something different. There's something about this land that tells us, that inspires us to do and be something different. And I think that for me, Steve, I mean, you and I can agree or disagree on politics all day long, but we are going to be locked in, like you said, brothers from another mother, on this fundamental idea of America, that, you know, there ain't no better place to experiment, to embrace, to reveal, to test, to fail, succeed, than these shores. And, you know, that for me is what this moment is about. It, you know, the Republican Party is rotten. It has rotted itself out. You and I are stalwarts of the party. We've been in great trench wars inside the party. But you and I also have grown beyond the party in many respects, because the party refused to grow. It refused to see the emerging demographic change that was happening around it and embrace it and lean into it. I tried, you tried. I remember well that John McCain moment, which stands out. Oh my God, is like such a stark moment when he's talking to his base and telling them, that's not who we are, ma'am. No, he's not a Muslim, ma'am. He's an American. He's a good man.
I share that story because, you know, it's like, you know, you know, the stuff gets portrayed, you know, it's in the movie, it's in, you know, that scene. But I want to talk about the predicate to that, like how that came to be. So my view is this is a pragmatic job, running a presidential campaign. It's not a great job if you're not a pragmatic person, reality based. Right. And you can, you know, when Lehman Brothers went down and the right track collapsed in mid September,
right,
financial crisis. So first, John McCain went out. He said the fundamentals of the economy were strong. And the story of the McCain campaign was like a Cinderella team, right? I mean, his campaign.
Oh, very much so.
He had come back. And it was like, that was the moment where I knew, right? That was it. We were done. He's like, we had used up our nine lives, right? That was it. We were going to be outspent by $300 million. 48 hours, we went from five up to seven down. Lights out. So I knew, right? McCain knew. We all knew, right? Any sophisticated observer knew that we're going to win that race. But you have to run through the finish line.
Yeah, you got to run the race. Got to run the race.
Party, right? And so every, you know, so the person who's in the party is running for you know, school board, you know, in some district in Hawaii, right? You know, is counting on you, right, to do your job, right, which is to go all the way through, right? It's not to turn off the voters or party. You can't give up. So you go forward. So we're at this event, and McCain says, and he would always say, my opponent, Senator Obama. Right? Mm-hmm. He was always that, right? And I heard the N-word. I looked at Mark Salter, and it was like kind of like you couldn't. Did I just?
Right. Did that just happen?
And it just happened. So go to the next event, and it happens three more times. Right. The whole national press corps is there. Now, back in the day, when you talk about perspective and emotion and everything, I would not have had a pleasant response, I suspect, when I was asked about it for the first mm-hmm. time, as if I own that mm-hmm. campaign. I personalized that right at the time. But obviously, it was an appropriate question. Right. The first time that we came. So we had this conversation with McCain, and Mark Salter starts off the conversation. He's like, basically, you can't say his name. If you say his name, someone in the crowd, at least at the last two events, is going to say the N-word, right? And we had been, you know, and I was two things with the McCain campaign. I always be proud of, right? We never gave an inch, right? Like we didn't do what Mitt Romney did, right? We didn't go campaign with Donald Trump. Remember Mitt Romney? 2012, Trump died. I got to get Trump's endorsement. I condemned it at the time, but the McCain position with Rush Limbaugh and all those guys was go fuck yourself.
Right.
Last uncompromising position with those people from a senior Republican who won, beat them. McCain was the last guy who beat those guys.
Yep.
That's why I hate him so much. That's why I hate me so much. Right. Because and we would not do the Jeremiah Wright ads, right? I wouldn't do it. Mark Salter wouldn't do it. And most importantly, John McCain wouldn't do it. But before you even got to John McCain, you had two guys around John McCain who were like, do you understand you work for John McCain? And John McCain is not going to put Reverend Wright in an ad to stir up racial hatred in the country, right? So we're sitting there. So you can't say his name out loud. And McCain goes, so what does that mean? And I looked at him. I said, it means you're going to lose. It means the race is effectively over. It means Barack Obama is going to be the president. It means we have to start thinking about the role we're going to play mm-hmm. in transition of power. Right. And later that day, right, or the next day, right, the next event after that is the one where he took the microphone back. Right. He understood. Right. That in the end, his opponent wasn't his enemy. And that at the end of the day, either one of them were going to be the next commander in chief.
Right.
It wasn't going to be him. And it wasn't a personal tragedy. And it wasn't a national tragedy. It was the choice of the American people. And I think John McCain, at the end of the day, right, you know, you have the ego, you have the competitiveness, all these people are alpha males, you know, to say the least, right? Any person, anyone,
right?
Oh, it should be me. I should be the most powerful person. Oh, boy, right? Duty.
Yeah.
So this concept is not just a military concept, citizenship concept. Where you have 330 million people in this country, every one of them who's an American citizen has a duty and obligation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And we need to start having some political leaders, right, go into the propeller, you know, lose joyfully, raise.
Right? Yeah, that's true. That's
what you need to hear, not what you want to hear, right? I'm not, right? And I'm going to tell you something. I deeply believe this. You know how you get the young vote? Be the person who goes on to the college campuses and tell them that the millennials didn't deserve shit with their college loan bailout.
Yeah.
Right? Be that person. You know what? Yeah. They're going to respond to it.
Oh, they will. No, they will. I mean, I enjoy working with the Gen Z folks now. Look, they've elected one of their own to Congress. The sea is changing. The tide is turning, as they say. But at the core of it is the point you just made about your civic duty as a citizen to the country to step into the breach and to demand better of those who serve in your name. Because that, for me, you know, as someone who's held elected office, it was profoundly important that I not just get it right, but I do it right. Because when I look at myself in the mirror, I wasn't just looking at me. I was also looking into the eyes and faces of the families and the communities that I served. And if I couldn't stand to look in those faces, that means I wasn't serving well. That means I wasn't doing well by them. So I could not agree more with your important words of encouragement there, but also words of admonition that we've got to stop being lazy and excuse makers about the kind of men and women that we're putting up in our name to serve on our behalf. And which is why my hope is that for a candidate like a Tim Ryan, be he a Democrat, Republican, or independent, a Green Party, you know, or just a guy who or gal who wants to serve, that the country recognizes that talent and gives them that opportunity, because that's where the future is. It's not, as I told a group of Gen Zers recently, I said, we fucked this up. And we're ready now to hand it on to you as we go to retire. And yeah, that's not fair. But you know what? Here's where you make magic. Here's where you improve on and do better than those who've come before. And that's all the country can ask, right?
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back right after this.
Retaliation with Julie Roginski is a weekly podcast focused on the stories of women who have spoken truth to power and have persevered despite the costs. It shares the experiences of courageous people who have sometimes been celebrated, but too often castigated for standing up for themselves and for others. Each week, I examine the structures, systems, and culprits responsible for perpetuating and promoting workplace toxicity. You'll hear stories from female celebrities, music label executives, politicians, police officers, and many others. As we examine the cultural reevaluations, policy changes, and legal steps that can finally bring an end to the ongoing attack on women in this country and around the world. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I was on a, one of the great campaign nights, right? Like on this thing about what you just said, like of my career. Was out with Tim, and we had a bunch of guys with us, you know, that had the Harleys out escorting the bus, you know, a lot of fun. A lot of these guys were from IBEW Local 8, great guys. And I'm on the back of a Harley trying to film the bus, guys taking me around it,
right,
driving into Cleveland. Beautiful, like, late October night, perfect weather. You know, Ohio
it's gonna be special.
No helmet law state. So when I was recommended later in the day, I got questions. What the fuck were you thinking with no helmet on? And I said, that's what I was thinking, freedom. And anyway, I'm on the back of the Harley, right? And guy goes, he goes, I lit that building up, right? And he's an electrician, obviously, IBEW. Do you know how long a master electrician, right, who can light a building, like a skyscraper, goes to school? About the same amount of time as we send a neurosurgeon.
Yeah.
Right. That guy doesn't have a college degree. Right. You know, I think the neurosurgeon is incredibly important to society. But so is this guy.
Yeah.
And you know what? Right? Here's the truth. How many people do we know who would be dressed in a $5,000 to $10,000 suit, would look at that guy and make a judgment about him? And with that judgment, you know, by a lot of people we know, it wouldn't matter, black guy, white guy, woman,
right?
Where it's a class, it's a place they come from, where they live now, right? Place of power. They make a judgment about that guy. It's somehow less than, less educated than. A lot of them would. A lot of them would.
Oh yeah.
Right? A lot of them. And you know what? That guy's a great guy. And brilliant guy. Right? And the idea, right, that everybody in America, right, has a college degree, right? I was just talking. I just asked someone in Washington this, right? I was talking to you. I said, what's the number? They were like 75%. I was like, it's 38%. Just because 100% of every person you know has a college degree, what does that tell you? Right, if 60% of the country doesn't have a college degree, and 100% of the people you know associated with have one, are you in touch? And that's a question. I don't mean that in a, you know, a negative way. I mean it in a searching way.
It's a way of better understanding the country.
But like, are you in touch?
Yeah.
Just like as you know, people who are listening to this conversation, you know, how do you stack up on that? You know, how do you think about that?
Well,
you know, I think, you know, you go by, you talk to people who work in politics, and you say, well, why is that black voter? Why is that black male voter voting for an increasing number for Trump? And you ask that through a political lens in Washington, right? That was like a particle physics problem. I said, well, you, anyone else ever drive by a highway workroom? I see the three main type of American dudes out there, mostly.
Uh-huh.
See, white dude, Hispanic dude. Are we really going to say, do people in the Beltway really believe those people have nothing in common? I'm going to tell you what they talk about. They talk about sex. They talk about sports. They talk about their wives. They talk about kids. And they have drinks with each other on Thursday after work. They don't hate each other.
Right.
Some of those guys out there are assholes. Some of them are great guys. Some of the assholes are black guys, white guys, and Hispanic guys. And some of the great guys are black guys,
white guys, and Hispanic guys. Right.
That's real life. Right. That's real life. And so, like, real life, like, people disagree. Right. They have to accommodate other perspectives, other points of view. And those things, right, are in real life, right, aren't a cause for, like, wanting to kill anyone. And so I think the entire entertainment complex that's formed up around politics that we watch, right, it's 7 years on. Not a lot of shows make it, you know, eight years. You know, you think about the famous jump the shark with the Fonz, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like old shows jump the shark. It's old. It's boring.
Yeah.
And so what's next is going to be something new. And the first person to the new is probably going to be a person we'll be spending a lot of time talking about over 23 and 24.
Yeah. Well, that's I think that's where this gets both exciting and a little bit nervous, because I'm not exactly sure yet how the American people are going to evaluate that newness. And I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, and hope that they see themselves better reflected than what we've seen in some of the characters like Trump and others that we see coming out right now, or who are out right now. Because that's, I guess in one sense you could say that's sort of transitory. Trump was a way of kind of saying to the world, particularly the established world of media and politics, you're not hearing what I'm telling you. You're not understanding what I'm saying, which is why he so surprised everybody with his win. Now the question is, have they learned enough to understand how to listen to what the voters, what the American people are saying they want, they need, they expect? And that's what the next few years are going to be about. And you've laid it out, my friend, as I knew you would, baby. I knew you would.
Yes, yeah.
I know you. I knew you would. And I just let folks know that little part in the middle there where it seemed like Steve and I were on the opposite side. We really weren't. We were just coming at a different angle with the boat, you know.
It's all right. I mean, like, you know, look, like I have always had friends from all political perspectives.
Yeah.
Right. And like I've had, you know, I can't how many, you know, and sometimes when it comes up, and it doesn't come up all the time, but like, you know, you have some friend, whatever. You know, you see, you actually believe the fuck out of here. No, never be for that, right? What's wrong with you? Right? Like no. Right. And we go on and we do like what we're doing.
That's right? It.
Life to me, right? Shouldn't it be about character? Right? Yes. Shouldn't it be about, right? At the end of the day, right? You know, I think there's like a threshold question. If you were in a foreign land, right? You saw an American, and we're not hard to pick out, right? Black,
right,
white.
Right. We do kind of stand out. Yeah.
One of us, right? They're in trouble. You're going to help that person, right? You're going to help them, right? Because they're an American. Or are you going to ask them for what their political party is?
Right. Right.
Shame on you, right? If you're in some foreign land, you see an American in trouble, you're not going to help that person.
Yeah.
Shame on you.
Yeah.
Right. Because in this country, right, like the one thing like we know for certain is like all our kids and grandkids and their grandkids will all be living together.
Amen. Amen. And whether you like it or not, we're all going to be living together.
Those people won't like any. Those people probably won't like each other any more than we like each
exactly.
other.
Exactly.
Right? It's not the point. They don't have to like each other. Right. But they have an obligation to each right. other because they're citizens. They have an obligation to the country. They exceed their dislike to each other. And they have to have the humility to accommodate each other. Their differences of perspective, their differences of opinions, their differences on ideology, race, ethnicity, and religion, because what binds everyone is this idea of e pluribus unum.
Amen. Steve Schmidt, political commentator, strategic advisor, and as I like to think of him, as the philosopher. You always bring it. You always keep it real, my friend. It was a great way for me to sort of download this past year, to not get lost in the politics and all of the who's up, who's down of this past year, but to look fundamentally at each other as Americans, and to hear your perspective on how we see ourselves and how we should see ourselves and what our responsibility remains for each of us, whether it's our civic responsibility to the country or our personal responsibility to each other. Steve Schmidt, you're the man. Thank you so much, my friend, for your time.
Thank you, Michael.
It's just great. And I want to thank all of you for sharing in this conversation. We left a lot on the table for you to chew on as you move into the new year. Appreciate it when you take that time to spend with me on the podcast. I'm so grateful for what you've given me this past year, the feedback, the support, the encouragement, the criticism. I've learned from it, hopefully grown from it, and we'll hopefully get to continue it in the new year. Until we turn that corner to 2023, be blessed, be well, stay safe, and know that our responsibility doesn't end when we walk out of our homes. It really kind of kicks into high gear because there's a neighbor or friend or someone in the community may need your help as well. So take care, folks. Be safe. Happy New Year. Happy holidays. God bless.
America, you asked for it. Or maybe you didn't. But either way, we have to talk. You're just in kind of a crazy place right now, Mr. and Mrs. USA. So we're going to sit down a couple of times a week and work it out between us. The way Americans do. On a podcast. Hosted by Beowulf Rocklin. Weird name. Weird news. Weird politics. Weird country. Facepalm America. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.